The Pentagon is hoping to tap the emerging field of artificial intelligence for the daunting task of tracking an enemy's nuclear missiles. Officials tell Reuters the secret project could give the United States an edge as it confronts nuclear threats that now include North Korea. The idea would be to deliver a rapid AI-assisted alert to U.S. commanders even before an adversary's missile takes flight. Officials believe Russia and China are actively pursuing similar technologies, and the U.S. must catch up.
Celebration in Saudi Arabia as driving licenses are issued to women for the first time in decades. A video released by the government shows women with their new ID as the country prepares to lift a ban on women driving on the 24th of June. It's been hailed as proof of a new progressive trend in the deeply conservative kingdom.
The British government has given a green light to Rupert Murdoch's takeover bid of Sky, Europe's biggest pay TV group. But the UK Culture Secretary highlighted one key proviso, the selling of assets, including broadcaster Sky News. Fox has already proposed a separate $52 million deal that would see Fox sell many of its TV and film assets to Disney.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It is June 6th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway today on the broadcast. We're going to talk about a new study about the jobs that new grads get right out of college and how that may impact their career choices long down the road. We'll bring in our first guest to have that conversation momentarily a little bit later in the program. A conversation about how the office of tomorrow may look and how you may actually get a chance to decide what that is. That'll be in our second segment at 5:40 this morning. But first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street, with the Dow futures up right now 86 points. NASDAQ futures are up about 13. S&P futures are up about 5. Around the rest of the globe this morning, markets in Europe are generally higher, with the FTSE up about a third. In Germany, the market is up about 0.5%, and in France, the market is up just a fraction. In Asia, markets are generally higher as well, with the Nikkei up about a third, the Hang Seng up about 0.5%. Oil is trading at $65.27 a barrel, which is down about 25 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning with our first guest. The Social Security and Medicare programs could run out of money sooner than expected. That's what the government says in a sobering checkup on the programs vital to the middle class. The report from the program trustees says Medicare will become insolvent in 2026, 3 years earlier than previously forecast. Its giant trust fund for patients' care would not be able to fully cover projected medical bills starting at that report. At that point, the report says Social Security will become insolvent in 2034. That's no change from the projection last year. The Treasury Secretary says there is time to fix the problems, but that certain long-term issues persist. Also, key Senate Republicans are pushing long-term legislation, long-shot legislation, that would require Congress to sign off on President Trump's import tariffs, a rare attempt to stand up to Trump on a bedrock issue that once defined the GOP. Congressional Republicans are mostly at odds with what they view as Trump's protectionist instincts on trade. Still, prospects for any bill to challenge the president remain uncertain. Many Republicans are hesitant to confront Trump in a legislative showdown that would end badly for them. Doing so could court a veto and bruise their standing with Trump voters that they need in the midterm elections. Front and center this morning, don't be so quick to dismiss the job choices new graduates make out of college. Underemployment could have long-term effects on the careers of college grads, reverberating years into the future. Michelle Weiss is the Chief Innovation Officer and SVP at Strata Education Network and is with us this morning. Michelle, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
So the study looks at specifically college grads who come out and maybe get a job at Starbucks or someplace else that has nothing to do with their college degree. And it seems to suggest that those early choices, those early job choices, could be dangerous and have long-term implications.
Yeah, I think we generally have this sense that, you know, there's a little bit of drift involved in in making our careers in our lives, and that, you know, if we take that job at Target or that job at Starbucks initially, that it's just a short-term thing that will go away soon as we find our footing. But in our study, what we found is that actually 43% of the 4 million resumes that we looked at over a 10-year period, 43% of folks actually started off underemployed. And those who started off underemployed actually remained underemployed 5 years out. They were actually five times more likely to stay underemployed 5 years out. And 75% of those folks actually remained underemployed 10 years out. So it goes against this idea that underemployment is a short-term problem. It actually turns out to be quite a long-term problem with long-term financial implications.
Let's talk a little bit about the time frame of the study, only in such that it may impact the discussion here about when the study was conducted and whether or not the economic times, whether the job market at that time was suitable for, let's say, a grad going and getting a job right out of college in their degree area. Was the study done during a point where the job market wasn't like it is now?
So part of it does include a little bit of the recession period. We looked at newly minted grads from the year 2000 and then 10 years on from that. And then what we did, which was also slightly different, was instead of measuring underemployment the way that the Bureau of Labor Statistics measures underemployment, what we did is we culled through millions of job postings and we looked at whether the job posting actually asked for a college credential over 50% of the time, and then we called that a college-level job to sort of understand the dynamics of how employers are asking for that degree. And so we're trying to make sure there's some sort of match between that college credential and a college-level job.
I ask because I'm wondering now in 2018 if, and we've had reports too on this program about how the job market is tight, and college grads have a good year this year in terms of finding work in their fields. Why would a college grad in this sort of market now pick a job, let's say at Starbucks or someplace that would be considered underemployment?
It's a really good question. I think the dynamics are a little bit more complicated than the tight labor market implies. So we can have low unemployment, but we can also still potentially have high underemployment in the sense that perhaps those folks who are currently employed are not necessarily in the roles that they were hoping for. And then we also have to remember that despite the fact that we have low unemployment rates, we also have really high part-time employment rates. So we have a lot of Americans who are sort of stitching together part-time jobs to make ends meet. So it's a complicated labor market right now.
Michelle, hang on with us. We want to get into more of this study and talk more about this coming up with Michelle Weiss, Chief Innovation Officer and SVP at Strata Education Network. The bad first job could cost you.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, stocks slated to open higher following a mixed bag Tuesday. The Nasdaq closing at a record high, boosted by Netflix and Amazon gains. For the first time on record, the number of job openings in the U.S. exceeds the number of jobless Americans. The Labor Department says jobs in April rose 1% to 6.7 million, the most since 2000. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has fought off a shareholder attempt to overhaul the company's board and replace him as chairman. The 46-year-old co-founder has been taking heat amid the company's finances and inability to meet production goals. Lord & Taylor has sold its flagship store on Fifth Avenue in New York, the office-sharing company WeWork. Last October said it would maintain a small presence there. In the 1930s, Lord & Taylor pioneered Christmas window displays for entertainment. Rawlings, which has outfitted kids and pros with baseball gloves for the past 130 years, is being taken over by a private equity company. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. This morning, our conversation on college graduates who start out their careers underemployed. New study says they're likely to stay that way for years. Michelle Weiss is with us, the Chief Innovation Officer and SVP at Strata Education Network. Michelle, I'm curious. We've talked about what the headlines of the study are. And I'm curious to know, are schools just not doing, colleges not doing a good enough job preparing candidates, graduates for that first job?
I think there's a question of whether we're doing a good enough job in the career advising services. And it's not to say that the folks who work in those offices aren't trying. It's just that it's not really embedded early on into the learning experience. So usually when students are looking at the career services options out there, and really only one out of six students kind of take advantage of those opportunities, it's often very late in the process, you know, in their third or fourth year, closer to graduation. But what we're realizing is that what you study matters a whole lot. So if you are, for instance, going to study computer science and engineering, those kind, and communications as well, those kinds of subject matter actually, you know, help you get out of that rut of underemployment. It often makes you less likely to be underemployed from the outset. So these kinds of, you know, important bits of information are helpful to people as they begin their pathways versus much later on in the process.
Those STEM education jobs, too, seem to be immune from this, right?
Somewhat, but not completely. What's interesting is that biology actually has a high underemployment rate because most often you go to graduate school with a major like biology instead of going directly into the workforce. And so it actually has a much higher rate than we would imagine. But yeah, for the most part, computer science and engineering in particular out of the STEM disciplines are really great. But what's fascinating is that that's mostly true for men. If men actually pursue those fields, it helps them quite substantially. For women, however, it doesn't really matter what they study. It actually, they often end up more underemployed than men. One out of three men start off underemployed versus almost one out of two women. We don't know exactly why, but what's fascinating is that for the most part, it doesn't matter what the women study. They will be more likely to be underemployed, with the exception of something like engineering, where men and women are actually equally likely to be less underemployed.
The why there is an important question, and I know you see the answer is not very clear, but if you had to wager a guess on that, what would it be?
I think it's a complicated answer. I think women do tend to sometimes can be studying different kinds of disciplines, so that does lead to potentially different kinds of pathways ahead. But it could also come down to something, you know, less concrete, like the creation of social capital networks. You know, there are things such as, you know, old boys networks that really do help people get into jobs that might be at a higher level than what women might be able to get access to. What this study basically demands is a little bit more research into this to understand that why it's quite concerning that there is such a substantial difference between men and women making it forward.
What are the financial costs of this sort of underemployment for these new college grads?
On average, we estimate that actually, if you start off underemployed, you on average earn $10,000 less annually than, you know, appropriately or fully employed graduates. And then you have to think about that accumulating over time and compounding over time. It's a pretty substantial cost.
Michelle, so as we wrap the conversation up, is there any advice or is there anything that college grads who may be listening right now or their families or educators can take away from the conversation to prevent sort of this underemployment from happening and get a better footing when they start off?
Yeah, so it's important to remember that not everyone starts out underemployed, but for those who do, there are actually ways of maneuvering out of it. And so one way to think about it is if, for instance, a newly minted grad is in one of those underemployed positions, it's helpful to sort of reorient and think about, okay, if I am working in food preparation or food services, for instance, I may want to look at areas or sectors in which there might be more growth or mobility built in so that even if I'm underemployed, I can get recognized and potentially pulled up and moved up the management chain because they see the potential in me. So instead of going for that grounds maintenance crew kind of job, there are other things that kind of open people up to more growth opportunities, you know, things in community and social services and social sciences and office and administrative support and business and financial operations. And our report kind of tries to go into that. So it's not to say that all hope is lost if you start off underemployed. It's just a matter of kind of reorienting and make sure that, you know, you do pick a field that does kind of leverage and show a future employer how you make connections between the knowledge that you gained in college and what you're doing in the workforce today.
We're going to link out to the findings of the study, and people can find more in the podcast later this morning. But Michelle, we appreciate you being on with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
Thanks so much for having me.
Michelle Weiss is the Chief Innovation Officer and SVP at Strata Education Network. You can find more about them at strataeducation.org.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. LearnCore, a Chicago startup that makes sales training software, announced it's been acquired by Belgium tech company Showpad for $50 million. LearnCore has 45 employees and has grown without raising institutional venture capital. Its founder is also one of the creators of Catapult Chicago, a local co-working space. Chicago startup Kapow, an online platform for planning corporate meetings and events, has been acquired by Washington, D.C.-based Cvent. Terms of the deal weren't disclosed, but Kapow's 50 employees will join Cvent. And Chicago startup OV Smartware is making circular smart tags that attach to items in your fridge and notify you when they're about to spoil. Working with Amazon Alexa, the tags light up green to signify a fresh item and turn yellow and eventually red, which signifies that the item has likely spoiled. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. NeoCon is happening June 11th through the 13th at the Mart here in Chicago. The event bills itself as the annual gathering place for commercial design world's manufacturers, dealers, architects, designers, end users, design organizations, and even those of us here in the media. And one of the companies that'll be there is furniture manufacturer KI. We're happy to have Sean Green with us this morning, the VP of Design and Product Marketing there. The 50th edition of NeoCon. Sean, you guys are going to be there with a new concept called Tattoo. What is it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Tattoo. Tattoo is a great new system. You know, not like the traditional panel systems out there, but, you know, the key here, the hook is the idea is that we've created a product solution that allows the user to manipulate, to move, to organize, to basically set up their workstation in an ideal format on the fly. No tools, to be able to work both collaboratively or on an individual basis. Without all the complexity that you have for all the traditional systems out there. So it defines and divides space, provides highly adjustable services, provides privacy, lounge items, personal storage, et cetera. But it is in this really unique fashion. It's what we call a hackable system, meaning that the user themselves can manipulate the product to best adapt to their needs.
It's an interesting concept. Give us an example of how it would work. For instance, let's say we're at a desk, and I hate to call these things cubicles because I hate cubicles, but that's what I think people have in their mind is that cubicle sort of space. How do they redesign that into something on the fly like that?
Yeah, well, you know, the word cubicle, I think, has a real negative stereotype, so hence the reason why we did this. So you have these space division elements, and really envision them as being freestanding screens that you can literally move around. You can pull these screens. Some of them have power, some of them don't. The ones that have power are actually more of a fixed asset, but the perimeter screens, they define it by the space. They're also there as a marker surface or a tackable surface, et cetera. And then all of the furniture within those screens. So if you look at it from afar, it looks a lot like a panel-based system, but fundamentally it's very different because it doesn't have all those mechanical connections and all of that complexity. It's super easy to plan and specify. So all of the storage and the lounge, height-adjustable tables, as well as some of our secondary services, all program within the context of those screens, so the math is already done. So you can kind of make almost like Lego blocks, if you will. I think that's a real good analogy. You can plan and continually update this base plan very quickly and efficiently. Because I know where your head is. You're thinking, well, you know, traditional systems panels and everything's bolted together, and you're sort of in your cube, and you're in a 6x6 or a 6x8 or whatever it is that you're prescribed. Fundamentally, it's nothing like that. It may look like that, but from a functionality standpoint, as well as personal flexibility, fundamentally different.
I'm looking at one of the systems, or one of the impressions of this, one of the drawings of this, and it's a sort of a space that you have the desk on one side with looks like a keyboard and a computer, and the other side you have something that flips up, so it looks like you can plug your iPad or your tablet in, and then it projects onto a larger screen that pops up and creates sort of a desk-looking thing out of what looks to be just like a filing cabinet. So that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's a personal vanity or vanity storage. And one of the things that we've really noticed is that people have stuff that they bring with them into the office. It's not just about paper storage, et cetera. Where do you put your gym shoes? Where do you put your bag as a lady? Where do you put your personal things when you come into a space? So there's a big emphasis on personal use within the context of these workstations. We understand people have busy lives, and especially when you look at some of the migrations that you have in terms of work styles with the millennials, that tend to be much more migratory. They tend to be much more socially aware, cognizant. Work has gone from being very task-specific to being much more creative. And we wanted a system or a solution that really responded to those varying needs. And that's what Tattoo is. Tattoo, even the name fundamentally, is different. It evokes the idea of personalization, and yeah, that's really what we're talking about.
Right. And this is something that we here at WGN are sort of experiencing as we speak. We've moved into a brand new state-of-the-art facility, and our work area is a shared work area, and not a lot of personal space for us to bring those things that you mentioned, or gym clothes or whatever. I guess the question is, you know, if we're those places that have gone down that route with not a lot of personal space, do they risk sort of alienating their workforce? Or if we make it too not personal, isn't it sort of become sterile?
Yeah, when you try to homogenize a space, you know, we look at a space, our primary objective as a manufacturer is to help organizations align their culture, their brand, and their functional objectives to create the types of spaces that best work for their organization. And it's not a cookie-cutter approach. And I think what you have with the traditional systems furniture solutions is more of a cookie-cutter approach. And that's, they even have a term for it. They call it typical. So they'll say, this is a typical workstation. And I think a lot of organizations out there want anything but typical. They want product solutions that are more personalized or crafted to their particular environment. And I think Tattoo is a good foundational element for having those conversations about aligning culture, brand, and functional objectives to create really compelling and engaging spaces.
As you developed Tattoo, how much did you take into account the data from what's happening in the job market right now? We've fallen down to unemployment, which is 3.8%. More people are in the workforce. We have these vibrant downtown areas, vibrant cities. People are back to work. With all those people back to work, how does that impact all of these design systems?
It greatly influences it. We typically will design for a wide cross-section. We tend to not want to be uber-specific with regard to a design solution. But, yeah, we leverage data. And what we understand now is that, based on some of the research that we have from the Department of Labor, we're actually finding that the millennials are pretty an interesting group in the sense that they actually stay on the job longer than what we give them credit for. They have very similar wants and desires with regard to their careers, et cetera. But fundamentally, they work differently. They leverage technology. They're more interested in the personal interaction. And this idea of attraction and retention, which I think is what you're getting to, is critically important to the success of organizations. The cost associated with replacing an employee or recruiting for an employee, et cetera, is extremely expensive. And if you lose a qualified employee to another organization, not only do you have X period of time that you have to work to replace them, but you also have X period of time where they everything they know has left the organization, and you have to work very hard to educate them to get them up to speed for the previous employee. And there's all kinds of data around that, and that's something that we're incredibly interested in, and another data point that we use when we create systems like Tattoo.
Obviously, it's a major investment for companies to bring in and design their offices. And I would imagine with the cost of that, and you mentioned the cost, too, of retention and making sure employees stay and like what they see, is to be able to keep updating this. But that's expensive, too. I mean, and it seems to me that this Tattoo system can constantly be changing.
Yeah, and that's one of the key benefits of the solution. Not only is it easier to plan, specify, design, and install, the lifecycle cost becomes much more approachable for an organization, and the downtime is minimized. So let's say, for example, all you want to do is move your workstation, your desk, literally from the left to the right side, or you want to be forward-orientated as opposed to having your back to the hallway. As a user, you could literally unplug, reposition the product, and continue working without having to call your facilities team. And we think that there's some incredible value and merit to that. Now, is it going to be for every company? Maybe, maybe not. But it does provide an additional point of differentiation. And what we found we did one really major project in Milwaukee for a client, approximately 39 floors of furniture. And the initial numbers that came in was about 50% less labor intensive to install than a traditional system. So if you look at the value proposition, it's fairly compelling when you remove all of that complexity and get to a much more simplified idea or solution.
We're running a little late on time here, Sean, but I want to ask you, maybe in like a minute or so that we have left, I know you're planning for the offices of today, but how different do you think the offices of tomorrow are going to be from where we're looking at today?
I think they'll continue to get smaller. I think you'll see more of a hospitality aesthetic. I don't buy into the idea of residential. I don't think any office looks like your home, but I think they do look like hotels. I think technology will continue to influence the way that we work and engage. You will probably continue to see much less of an emphasis on these really high-end task chairs. I think it's simply because people are much more migratory. They're going to move around. They're going to be more engaging. It's going to be much more of an emphasis on public spaces as opposed to private spaces.
Sean, we appreciate you being with us. Best of luck to you at NeoCon, and please come back and join us sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, Sean Green is the Vice President of Design and Product Marketing at KI. You can find them on Twitter at KI Tweets and online at KI.com. NeoCon again at the Mart starting June 11th.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a snapshot of the markets heading to the opening bell later this morning, and it looks good. Dow futures are up 102 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures higher as well. Now, commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Futures closed higher at the Board of Trade yesterday thanks to a technical bounce after the nearby July contract neared a two-week low and on worries about dry weather in the Black Sea wheat crop region. Lower than expected U.S. corn and winter wheat crop ratings and persistent dryness in South Russia's wheat area provided pretty good support for Board of Trade corn futures. So at the end of the day yesterday, the July corn futures up 2¾ cents, July wheat up 4¼ cents, July soybeans ended down 0.25 cents, but the rest of the months ended higher. Livestock, the trade war came back to play yesterday as Mexico said it would put a tariff on bone-in hams that we ship to Mexico for deboning because of cheaper labor. And the U.S. exports a significant amount of bone-in hams to Mexico. Lean hog contracts got a little support mixed yesterday. The nearby July hog contract down $1.10 a hundredweight. But June cattle gained $2.67, and August feeder cattle gained $1.50 a hundredweight in the trade yesterday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, June 6th, in today's economic reports, the Commerce Department will release international trade data for April. The Labor Department releases first quarter productivity. Mortgage Bankers Association has mortgage applications. The EIA Petroleum Status Report is due. Earnings today, Signet Jewelers releasing earnings among those doing so today. Some things that just could move the markets on this Wednesday, June the 6th.